Many of New Zealand's endemic birds may not fly well, if at all, but they're still a challenge for artists wanting to sketch them in the wild. The nocturnal species pose an extra degree of difficulty for artists wanting to sketch from life. Nicholas Dillon knows this full well. He's out in the snow and the sun in hard-to-get-to places, all to observe and draw and paint the birds he loves. He lives in the Wairau Plains near Blenheim, not far from where he grew up. The watercolourist has just published a book called Drawn to the Wild, Paintings of New Zealand Birds. It also includes some of his preliminary sketches and colour swatches, and there's a gallery of images from the book on our webpage rnz.co.nz/standingroomonly. Lynn Freeman asked Nicholas Dillon what makes the Wairau Plains so special.
So many of the birds that I paint and love are part of that environment. Migratory waders, godwits, etc., that come down from the Arctic, of course, to spend the summer here. Royal spoonbills, which have breed in the lagoons, and much more as well. So, it's a great environment.
You write also about Buller's History of Birds of New Zealand, these illustrations, and we see them everywhere. They're on cushions, they're on clocks. They're still a seminal work. But my understanding is that many of those were not drawn from life in the way that you do. So when I'm looking at them, they don't seem to be standing or moving or perched quite right. But for you, you spend so much time out observing. That's clearly crucial to the kind of work that you create. You understand how they move, even in these still images.
That's very much the critical thing for me, Lynn, is to be able to spend time in the environment, and rather than the illustrative works that the Koolemans did for Buller's work, I want to capture something more of the life and the essence that so intrigues me about birds, that sort of lifeblood of the living individual. And the only way that I can get to that is through working directly from nature. I use a high-powered spotting scope, telescope, with a high magnification, and that allows me to look at the birds, study them, draw and paint them while I'm observing them. And through hours of doing that constant observation, I build up a feeling that is stored inside, really, inside myself, alongside the drawings and watercolour sketches in the sketchbook. And it, for me, rather than working from photographs, and I do use photographs and I take photographs, but the whole essence for me is those long hours of looking, of sitting and just breathing in nature and birds. And through that, I think I have an understanding and a feeling that I hope in some way gives my paintings something more than if, for example, I'd just used a photograph. And that's where I love to be, outdoors doing that.
You're clearly very patient, I must say. What are some of the more unusual places or challenging places you've gone to see a bird that you specifically wanted to observe and to draw?
I love working with keres, and luckily with ski fields it allows some quite easy access to the mountainous terrain of the Keer, and our local ski field here, the Rainbow Ski Field in the St Arnold Ranges near Lake Rotuiti, is a wonderful environment. Sadly, the Keer numbers there have dropped right off, and we've hardly seen any in the last couple of years, but for a number of years, I worked up there. I'd drive up there on any given day, and I could find a good number of keer, maybe six or seven, and look at where they were feeding. Often they feed on the roots of Selmesia daisy, etc. And sitting up on those slopes, and I'm quite passionate about rough weather, so I'd often choose days where there was a bit more atmosphere rather than a blue sky day that a skier might prefer. So I've had some wonderful days up there and amongst snow flurries and wind and sitting on quite steep slopes. And on one occasion, I actually had a keer that, an old keer, a male keer that snuck up behind me and was tugging at the back strap of my backpack, that had all my painting gear in, and I was looking at his the rest of his family who were all feeding away on some mosses in front of me, and I was being shaken around by quite a bit of wind, and then I thought, hang on, there's more than just wind here. It felt a little bit like an earthquake, and then I realised there was something more than that. Turned around to find this kea loping away across the slope. So it's in environments like that that I do love.
Yes, you mentioned the snow. You've got kea in the snow. You've got kararea, the New Zealand falcon, in the snow. You've got takahe in the snow as well.
Yeah.
So you freeze for your art sometimes, Nicholas,
yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah, no, I think the wonderful thing about working in nature and the process of painting and drawing, being very much in that moment. I'm intensely focused, trying to draw and depict into the sketchbook what I'm looking at, trying to extract the essence of these living creatures in front of me that I do. I lose all sense of time and where I am. So sometimes I've woken up with not woke. Well, it is like waking up from a dream almost with numb fingers and realizing where I am. So I don't mind a little bit of that suffering.
I'm just thinking, looking at some of your works, where you've put kind of a colour palette, just little blobs of watercolour that have gone into a work. And I've got the kereru here, the New Zealand pigeon. I love that because often our birds from a distance can look a bit plain and drab, on a limited colour scale. So you've got to get up close to really see their colours. And there's so many colours that you're using in the kereru.
Yeah, well, the kereru is obviously a great example of a bird that contains a lot of colour and can, from a distance, appear sometimes quite muted in its colour, but in different light and seen up close, like a lot of birds, it reveals an astonishing array of colour. And that process, working into the sketchbook and making those watercolour sketches on the spot, I'm testing my colour without really thinking too much. As I mix it, I test it on the paper. So there's often a lot of evidence of that through the book and certainly in my sketchbooks. And they make a wonderful little study, I think, that has obviously caught your eye, Lynn, a wonderful study of their own, like an abstract little sort of colour palette. But it's as much as anything, it's just testing those colours as I mix them. How's the tone? How's the colour going to look as I mix it actually on the paper? And sometimes I try to blend them on the paper too to see how that's going to give a certain effect. So all sorts of little interesting little things into the margins of my sketches.
Also, one of the hardest things to capture with this is movement. So I've got the white-fronted tern, Tara, and with some orcas.
Yeah.
But all of them moving in the ocean. Let's not talk about how difficult it is to do water, but just the movement of the birds. I mean, I'm imagining this because I can't draw a straight line, but is it really tricky to get a sense of movement?
Yes, it is, and that's probably why there are less flying birds in the book. I don't do a lot of flying birds. Some of the paintings I do of flying birds, I have to distill that from photographs, but as time goes on, I get better at drawing that movement or giving an indication of that movement. And that little sketch you're talking about of the killer whale, the orca, moving south was off the Kaikoura Peninsula. And it was just a great atmospheric day as a building southerly was coming through, and these two orca were just in a direct line south. And it was actually a pod of orca with some young. And then it was surrounded by all sorts of seabirds, but particularly the little tara, the white-fronted tern, and I just wanted to capture something of that movement, as you say, of the wind, the sea, the orca and the little tern as well.
I did go looking for what I knew would be here, having read the introduction, an illustration of the shining cuckoo, because they have a very special place in your heart and in your story.
Yeah, and the introduction that I write sort of loosely poses the question of why birds. The very earliest, the first memory I ever have in my life is of a shining cuckoo that flew into the window of our living room. And I jumped up and raced outside to see what had gone on and found this bird lying in the garden bed. And I still remember to this day that that feeling, being completely transfixed by this shining, glittering thing that was a living creature. Well, sadly, it was dying in my hands, and I think that triggered the feeling that built up inside me at that moment. Is exactly the same feeling I get now when I'm excited about painting an image or a bird, when I'm struck by something. And I realize it now, that was that same feeling back then when I was just 4 or 5 years old, that's continued through my life. So I think that perhaps, along with a few other experiences around that time of nature, triggered this lifelong love for wanting to make images of birds.
You say in the book that you've painted and drawn the banded dotterel more than any other bird. But as I was looking at these, you know, I've been listening to the news stories about just how they're being wiped out in places like Kaikoura, despite people's desperate efforts to save them. They're incredibly vulnerable. So here in Eastbourne and Wellington, they've taken a hammering in the past. So when you're drawing these species, especially those that are so endangered, that's... It's heartbreaking, isn't it? It's a double-edged sword. They're beautiful to see them, but you know that they've got a tenuous hold on the future.
Yeah, it really is. You know, you feel especially lucky to have the opportunity to have these birds, and you know, for me to get so close to them, and what unique creatures and individuals they all are. New Zealand birds evolved in this land of no mammalian predators and no humans originally, and so we have all these ground breeding birds, waders, that are very open to this predation by humans or disturbance by humans, and you know, cats and stoats and weasels and rats, etc. And I mean, when I had a wonderful experience last year painting the little Tara iti, our rarest bird in New Zealand on the Mangawai sandspit, and here are just a handful of these birds that breed in this very fragile environment that with the wind-blown sand that's changing by the second, their landscape where they nest, and storm tides that I refer to in the book, and I just feel very lucky to have these moments with those threatened species. It's a beautiful thing.
Are there any of our birds that you have yet to see in person?
Kakapo, I haven't seen in the wild, and I'd love to do that someday. I've had the good fortune of being able to study specimens being mounted by a taxidermist that were going to Dock and to Papa, and to study their plumage. But to actually see one in the wild would be a pretty special thing. And the kiwi, funnily enough, I've only had one brief sighting of a kiwi in the wild. It's not a bird that I get around home. And they're another species that I want to do a lot of work on at some stage from the wild.
It's a lovely story in your introduction to the book, Nicholas, about your admiration for Raymond Ching. I've got several of his books too. He was a real favourite of mine for his illustrations. Absolutely beautiful New Zealand bird painter.
Yeah.
And you had to wait a little while for a reply. But what advice did he give you?
Well, I was wanting to know whether to go to art school. You know, I was young. I was 15 when I wrote to him. I waited a while for that reply. But when it came, he said... you know, that I'd sent him some images of some of my work, he realised I had the basic ability to draw and paint, and that my love was the natural world. And he sort of advised me just to go and travel and look at art, that art school might push me out of the direction that I was going in. And you know, as I say, he realised that was my passion. To travel the world and look at great art wherever I could, and go and speak with artists who I admired. So I took that advice, and once I'd left school, that's what I did.
That's Nicholas Dillon, whose book Drawn to the Wild, Paintings of New Zealand Birds, is published by Potten and Burton. He was talking to Lynn Freeman.